Warning.
The We're Not Normal podcast assumes no responsibility or liability for any errors that Gregory may make when pronouncing the names of people, places, and things. Know that Gregory is not trying to disrespect anybody. The We're Not Normal podcast is not trying to disrespect anybody. Also, all of our information is provided by on Greg's phone and google.com. Thank you for listening to We're Not Normal podcast. Stay tuned.
Sit still. We have temporarily taken over your motion picture screens to bring you the following message.
You're doomed!
And welcome back to another episode of the We're Not Normal podcast. Thank you guys for tuning back in. If you're a listener for our podcast, thank you for tuning back in. If you're a new listener, welcome. We welcome you to our Unnormies crew. I guess that's what we're going to call them, Unnormies? Or,
yeah.
Or were you thinking something else?
Not Normies.
Not Normies?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, we could go with that.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's not trademarked by anybody.
Yeah.
I know that there's another podcast called Normal Not Normal or something.
Yeah.
Hopefully they don't call their crew not normies. But yeah, hopefully that is not trademarked and we'll go with that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you guys for tuning in. And if you haven't yet, subscribe to the podcast so you know that we drop a new episode. We're trying to drop an episode every week when we can. And we thank you.
Oh my god.
Oh yes. Also, in the description you'll notice a link that is the listener support.
Oh my gosh.
99 cents. It's like an Arizona can. You know,
oh
just
my
like
gosh.
Just like throw that to if you could throw that to us, if you know, we know that inflation is tight right now.
Yeah.
Things are tight. So, you know, if you want to, we're not forcing you. 99 cents will do. Anyway,
yeah.
On to the podcast episode. All that shit off to the side. Let's get to today's topic. Today's topic, we're going to be covering some supposed cursed objects. Now, we've covered quite a few cursed objects.
Cursed dolls. We did haunted dolls.
We definitely did haunted dolls there.
That was a funny episode. If you haven't listened to it, you need to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's
definitely.
Bomb chicka bomb bomb.
Definitely. So we do have like two dolls on this list. We have the Annabelle and the Robert the doll. But we'll like cover them again on this episode.
Are you going to do a brief cover?
Just a brief, like not like a long drawn cover, because we already did Annabelle and we already did Robert the doll.
We did.
The Hope Diamond is on this list as well.
We did
I don't think, too. Yeah, we did a long drawn one too. So, I mean, we really don't have to like cover them. Maybe just like a quick reminder of like, you know, the supposed like hearse is
okay,
behind
it.
That. But anyway, yeah, so we'll begin with the Anguished Man. The Anguished Man is a painting created by an unknown artist. Now, here's a picture of it, Cass.
Oh, God.
Does he look really anguished?
He looks creepy.
It looks almost looks like a mix between. This almost looks like he has the hockey mask, the Jason Voorhees hockey mask fused on his face, and he's just screaming about it because the plastic melted on his face, and when he was screaming, it just got fused that way, and then that's how his face is, and now he's a painting.
That's sad.
It is.
It's
now thinking about it just the way.
Something I saw, if it would be something I saw, like at somebody's yard sale, would I ever pick it up? Hell no. And I like creepy stuff. So
yeah.
That's shocking to me.
This
is on a whole different level of creepy.
And it's like another thing too, when you shop for antiques and all that, you don't know the exact origin of the part. Actually, you don't know the origin of the object that you're purchasing from the antique or the flea markets or anything like any of the any secondhand object that you purchase from, you know, from anywhere.
True.
You don't know the origin of the object. You don't know the background. You don't know if it was involved in some sort of like a witchcraft or voodoo or anything. Nothing against those religions. Or if it was, if there was like some sort of power like enclosed in the object, and then this power has some malicious intent inside. And if you handle it the wrong way, this power or this entity will get released and then just like wreak havoc on your home. Then that's the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Hopefully that hasn't happened to anybody. I know that there are stories that it has happened to people. People purchasing something from a yard sale,
thrift store,
and then they bring it back to their place, and then they start experiencing all these weird things that happen in, like poltergeist activity, or just like things going astray. Like it's just crazy. But anyway,
But I will still go to antique stores, thrift stores.
Oh yeah, there's definitely
yard sales. I hope that. In my mind, I would never pick anything that's like that.
Right.
But,
yeah.
You know.
I hope so, too. I mean, like, I enjoy, like, going to antique stores. And then there's also sorts of good deals. And
I've gotten
three Spider-Mans I've gotten from.
That's all secondhand stuff.
Secondhand. And, you know, hopefully none of them.
Yeah.
I'd be sad.
To disrespect any of the stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And they're posing really nice. They're, you know, they're posed real nice, real proper.
Oh, my God.
I don't know where that's from. I've heard Michael Rapaport use it. That's where I got it from. But I'm sure he's gotten it from somewhere, too. Anyway, on to this anguish, man, finishing him off. Owner Sean Robinson from Cumbria, England, claims to have inherited the painting from his grandmother.
Sounds like the person who is like the director or something, or the main person in like Winnie the Pooh.
Sean Robinson?
Isn't Robbins or something like that?
It's fuck. It's not Mr. Robbins.
No, what the hell?
Christopher Robbins.
Is that what it is?
Yes, okay. I think it, but you could like something look it up like just
that.
To.
Whatever, I'm just going to let that one go. We're going to think it's Christopher Robbins.
It's Christopher something.
Yeah.
And it's definitely not Christopher Columbus. I know it's Christopher Robbins.
Oh my God. I was not even thinking Christopher Columbus.
So he claims to have inherited the painting from his grandmother, who told him that the artist who created the painting had mixed his own blood into the paint.
Why would you give that to your grandson?
I don't know. Like, just like being generous.
Never.
Just like for like, it was probably just like a last minute gift, you know, just like a last minute gift.
Here, this was given to, I got this and it was done in the artist's blood. I'd be like, ew.
He'd be like, ooh, he was just probably thinking Lysol. It was like, really? COVID, Corona. Yeah.
No Ronas. No Ronas. Or STDs or, you know, you don't fucking know.
AIDS or anything.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Oh my God. All those like blood-borne pathogens or whatever.
Thanks.
Nothing, none of that.
Nope.
But we don't know.
Nope.
We have no idea. And the artist is unknown, but yes. Anyway.
It's just a creepy artist.
It's just, yep.
Wow.
And then guess what? The guy died by suicide
after. How do you know who it is, but you don't know who it is? Who the artist is?
This is what this guy claims on his YouTube channel.
Who guy died from suicide?
The artist, the painter.
But nobody knows who it is. But they know he died from suicide. That makes no sense to me. We don't know who it is, but we think he died from suicide.
We think this guy died.
Because he was painting and used too much blood and then ran out of blood. Like, that makes no sense to me. Oh my God.
Soon after finishing the work. So, yes, I'm assuming that he bled to death.
Yeah, that's horrible.
That is a horrible way to die. The painting has been characterized as being supposedly haunted.
It looks haunted.
Robinson uploaded videos of the painting to his YouTube channel in 2010. In which he claims to have heard crying and moaning noises in his house and to have once seen the figure of a man.
Wow.
In 2016, Rights were acquired to make a film based on the story of the painting. Oh, we'll have to check that film out.
No, we're not.
Oh, okay.
You can check it out. Yeah. I am not.
too close to comfort for you?
Yeah, too much. I don't need any more bad luck. I got enough. I'm good.
Right. Yes. Ooh. So here's another one. Busby Stoop Chair. I don't think I've heard of this one.
No, I don't think I have either.
So the Busby's Stoop Chair, or the Dead Man's Chair, is an allegedly haunted oak chair that was cursed by the murderer Thomas Busby. I want to say Bugsby, but it doesn't have a G in it, so Busby. Before his execution by hanging in 1702 in North Yorkshire, in the United Kingdom, due to the many deaths later attributed to people sitting, excuse me, a Jarvis, don't you hear me
Jarvis
speaking?
A Jarvis.
So anyway, with this Thomas Busby dude, due to the many deaths later attributed to people sitting in the chair, the landlord donated it to the Thirsk Museum. Well, that's a way. That's a, like a well way to get rid of like haunted chair. Just like donate it to a poor sap museum. But you know, hopefully they're taking care of it.
Mm-hmm.
So the background, okay. So this Thomas Busby was arrested, tried, and condemned to death after he murdered his father-in-law, Daniel Audie, in 1702. Audie and Busby were running a coin counterfeiting business as well as other criminal enterprises. And they argued about the business, which ended with Busby killing Audie. One variation of the story has Busby cursing the chair whilst on his way to his execution, whereas another says that he was drunk in the chair when he was arrested and cursed it then. Busby was gibbeted at Sanhutin Crossroads beside an inn, which later had his name changed to the Busby Stoop Inn. Gibbeted. I wonder if that's another word for hanging.
Is there a picture of it?
Yeah, that's a gibbet.
It looks like, so that's where you would hang somebody?
Yeah.
That's creepy.
Hanging crib, public display.
Wow.
People were different back then.
That's cruel. They're like, if they didn't like you, you better watch out.
You have to be a different type of person to want to hang somebody in public.
That's a slow death, too. That's like torture.
They just fucking, wow. They're pulling it. That is like insane. Just like a bass or a shark you just caught. Like, they just displayed them back.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, that is. So beside an inn, which later had its name changed to the Busby Stoop Inn, the site of the execution opposite the pub on the A61 and A167 crossroads, now a roundabout, was said to be haunted by Busby's ghost. So here's the deaths, okay? Locals claimed that during the Second World War, Canadian airmen from the nearby base at Skipton-on-Swale went to the pub, and those who sat in the chair never returned from bombing missions over mainland Europe. In the 1970s, some fatal accidents were linked with the chair. In 1978, the chair was ultimately hung from the ceiling of Thirsk Museum to prevent occupancy, even by maintenance. Wow, even the maintenance guys weren't allowed to touch it.
That's crazy.
A furniture historian examined the chair and found it to have machine-turned spindles, whereas 18th century chairs were made using a pole lath. Some like a pole lath. Is that I've heard the term lath before.
You continue. I'll look up pole lath.
Oh, I got it right here.
Okay, well then that was fast.
A pole lath, also known as a spring pole lath, is a wood turning lath. What the fuck is a lathe?
It's a lathe, probably. Not a lath.
So lathe is a machine tool that rotates a workpiece about an axis of rotation to perform various operations such as cutting, sanding, knurling, drilling, deformation, facing, and turning with tools that are applied to the workpiece to create an object with symmetry about that axis. See, I've heard lathe before. Yeah, yes. So when I worked in the machine shop, so yeah. Yes, so that's like lathe sounded so familiar. So this pole lathe is just like pretty much like a old century type of cutting, you know, pretty much like shaping the edges and all whatever, like the of wood or whatever type of material that pretty much like to make the chair. Okay. So he dated the chair to 1840, 138 years after Busby's execution. So this might be a mock chair? Might be a mock chair just sitting at the Thirst Museum.
Well, maybe because it's that cursed.
Oh, that they had to copy
or
and paste
maybe
it.
Somebody was gonna steal it or someone was gonna, they were worried about something happening.
Oh, so they might have it in the back somewhere.
Yeah,
and then they
I feel like, yeah,
then they have the copy and paste there just for display, just for a reference,
right?
But they don't want to have the real thing out in the display because they don't
steal it, or maybe it's got bad juju vibes. Yeah,
they'll steal it and then they get run over by a double-decker bus
or something.
The double-decker buses, I don't know if they had those back then, but yeah. Fucking crazy, man. So there's some cultural references sticking on the Busby chair. So in episode 26 of the webcomic Hitalia Axis Powers, England monologues to himself that he will get revenge on America using Busby's chair. However, Russia sits in the chair instead, causing it to break with its ominous aura. This chair is also mentioned in one of Russia's character songs, Pechka, Light My Heart. In the lyrics, even the Busby's chair gets blown into bits. In the same series, England's character song, Pub and Go, reminds that if you sit there in Busby's chair, you'll die and be dragged straight down to hell.
to the fucking point.
Yep. In his character song, Absolutely Invincible British Gentleman, Busby's chair is mentioned in the lyric, in Phenomena, Busby's Chair Predictions. Busby's chair was mentioned in an episode of the television program Unsolved Mysteries, and a similar story about a cursed chair was included in an episode of Beyond Belief, Fact or Fiction. I think I remember. You remember watching that episode, right?
I don't think so.
I think it was like some dude purchased the chair. It was like a dude like was doing really good, like just like odd chair. It was like a Victorian chair or something, and then anybody who sat in it like died.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Yeah, don't want that. Don't want that bad juju
around.
No, definitely not at all. Yeah. All right, guys, we're gonna take a quick break, so we'll be right back. Mm-hmm. And we're back. Okay, so the next object on our list is the Black Prince's Ruby. The Black Prince's Ruby is a large, irregular cabochon red spinel weighing 170 carats, or 34 grams. I believe that's how the G
is. That's a ring for your ass.
Set in the cross pate, or pate. Isn't a pate, like the cat food type of thing? But this one has like two T's and two E's, but the one with the upper thing, apostrophe thing up above it. So I'm, okay. Hold on. Let me see.
I wonder why you can't click on a word. Yeah, can you click on it? Can it tell you how to say it?
Hold up. Damn it, no. Come on. Let's go. Well, let's see. Let's do the web search. Pata. Pate. 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 Pate.
Pate.
Pate.
Hey.
We came to Pate.
Hey.
Oh my God. So the cross pate above the Cullinan, the second diamond at the front of the imperial state crown of the United Kingdom. The spindle is one of the oldest parts of the crown jewels in the United Kingdom, with a history dating back to the middle of the 14th century. It has been in the possession of England's rulers since it was given in 1367 to its namesake, Edward of Woodstock, the Black Prince. The stone is believed to have originated from the Badakhshan mines in present-day Afghanistan and Tajikistan. I think that's how you pronounce it. The principal source of large spindle gems in the Middle Ages. Ooh.
Got all that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So this, like, object has, like, a... This probably deserve to, like, have its own episode someday.
Let me see. What does it look like? Ooh, that's pretty.
Yeah, so this is the, that's the large piece right there mm-hmm. in the center of the cross.
Mm-hmm.
That's the supposed cursed, a black crown.
Diamond.
Black Prince's ruby.
Oh, ruby.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Wow, that's pretty.
It looks really soulless. So, anyway, like, all rest, so with the spindle, all red gemstones used to be referred to as rubies or ballast rubies. It was not until 1783 that spinels were chemically differentiated from rubies. They both have aluminum, oxygen, and a little chromium, but spinels also have magnesium, which rubies lack. So, yeah, that makes it different.
Interesting.
The Crying Boy is our next painting. So, I think this made an appearance in the Night Gallery, I think. If not the Night Gallery, it might have been Beyond Belief, Fact or Fiction. They, and something, like, or maybe Unsolved Mysteries, either one of those, like, you know, mysteries. Maybe, I don't know, it's either one of those programs that covered The Crying Boy.
Okay.
So The Crying Boy is a mass-produced print of a painting by Italian painter Giovanni Bragolin. So he lived from 1911 to 1981. That's a short-ass fucking life.
1911 to 1981?
Yeah.
No, it's not.
That's 70 years.
How is that short?
That's
back in the days?
Back in the days, yeah.
That's not... I don't feel like, you know...
I mean, 70-year-olds now, they're like bench pressing 250 pounds.
But that's now.
No.
He was born in 1911.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, so a short life would have been, what, like...
50 years, 40 or 30 years. Yeah, 50 years is a short life.
I still think, you know, like, considering, like, the stuff...
I don't think 70 is that bad.
Considering the stuff that was going on, you know? Like, plagues and all that.
Yeah, scarlet fever, I don't even know. Yeah.
Or the Spanish flu or something?
Yeah.
I don't know if that even spread over to the UK. Probably, I don't know.
Who knows?
Anyway... This was the pen name of the painter Bruno Amarillo. It was widely distributed from the 1950s onwards. So this is the picture of the Crying Boy. Now, there are numerous alternative versions.
I can't see him.
Oh.
Aw, poor pumpkin.
There are numerous alternative versions, all portraits of tearful young boys or girls. In addition to being widely known, certain urban legends attribute a curse to the painting. So on September...
Oh, my Lord.
Don't mind...
The Crying Boy right now.
The Crying Boy.
Mm-hmm.
Don't mind the cat in the background,
He's
guys.
He's a crying boy.
He's a crying boy. No.
Oh my God. Do you know where that's from?
No.
You don't want to know.
Thank you.
It's such an addictive song, but it's like a song that you like don't want in your head. But okay. It's just like, fuck. I'm a crying boy. I'm not even going to say the line.
In your head.
Yeah, yeah. So on the 5th of September 1985, the British tabloid newspaper The Sun reported that an Essex firefighter claimed that undamaged copies of the painting were frequently found amidst the ruins of burned houses. By the end of November, belief in the painting's curse was why. Oh, I think I remember. Mysteries at the Museum.
Oh, okay, maybe. That's probably true.
By the end of November, belief that the painting's curse was widespread enough that the Sun was organizing mass bonfires of the paintings set in by readers. People were just in mass. They were just like throwing pictures of the crying boy, right, and like just in a huge ass fucking bonfire, just. And then they're probably doing like some.
Hey, don't make fun of Native Americans. Is that what they're doing right now?
Oh, no, I'm not making fun. Okay. So mass bonfires on the paintings sent in by the readers. Steve Punt, a British writer and comedian, investigated the curse on a BBC Radio 4 production and called Punt Pie. Hey, is it really Punt Pie? It is Punt Pie.
Oh my God.
Punt Pie is a fact-based comedy radio series on BBC Radio 4, which Steve Punt, so his last name and then Pie.
Got it.
Investigates mysteries in Britain. All right, so I'm not going to delve deeper into that. The conclusion reached by the program following testing at the building research establishment is that the prints were treated with a varnish containing fire retardant, and that the string holding the painting to the wall would be the first to deteriorate, resulting in the painting landing face down on the floor and thus being protected. David Clark, investigative journalist, says that the stories naming the child as Don Bonillo or Diablo did not emerge until 2000 in a book by Tom Sleeman. They relate the child to several fires, including the painter's studio. However, he says that there is absolutely no truth whatsoever to that of any kind. Okay. Well, I mean, so it's basically like Irma legend.
Gotcha.
So the fires, the coincidences that painting being protected by the fire retardant around the frame and all that makes sense. Could be a plausible theory. I'll check him on that. Sorry about that. Joke I was like pulling later on also. I mean earlier also.
There'll be plenty later on too. Which one are you talking about?
I apologize in advance. The dancing in front of the fire and all that.
Yeah.
I mean, my apologies. I didn't mean to offend anybody. Don't need any of that bad juju around. All right. So the conjured chest is our next item on the list. I believe it's our next item. No, it's not. Anyway, Dybbuk Box. The Dybbuk Box, or the Dybbuk Box, is a wine cabinet claimed to be haunted by a Dybbuk, a concept from Jewish mythology. The box gained notoriety when it was auctioned off on eBay by owner Kevin Manis, who created a story featuring Jewish Holocaust survivors and paranormal claims that as part of his eBay item description. Manis' story was the inspiration of the 2012 horror film, The Possession. In 2021, Manus told Input Magazine that the Dybbuk box story was entirely fictional. Well, what the fuck?
I just, you know, I don't know.
Wow. So why the fuck did we waste so much fucking time on it? It's just like we wasted
but you get
10 seconds on it.
But you get that all the time. The last one, you know, was just a folklore.
It was just like urban legend, hearsay.
So you just wasted a couple of everybody's minutes on some shit.
A hearsay, good she job. Say.
We've already gone over this shit.
Oh, God. The gold of Tolosa, also the Aurum Tolosanum, is the Appalachian the blah 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 blah
blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah
blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah blah Quintus Servilius Capio from the Volcae town of Tolosa, modern-day Toulouse.
Oh, my God.
So they
Toulouse. I can't take any more today. You're too much.
Near contemporary, wow. Anyway. Okay, near contemporary Cicero briefly mentioned in his I can't even fucking speak right now. What the fuck? That
because you were talking shit. That's
yeah,
shit.
Yeah. Now my mind's all scrambled.
Yeah.
Philosophical dialogue, De Natura Deorum, referencing political scandal in the late. Roman Republic with the line considered the judicial inquiries, the one in reference to gold of Tolosa, and the one on the Jugurthine conspiracy. The treasure itself was discussed by several ancient historians, including Strabo or Cassius Dio. Anyway, so this, like, the amount of gold that was stolen from this town.
Mm-hmm.
So, reports the hall at, Justinus and, wow.
Of the peace?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Justinus and Orosius reports the hall at 100,000 pounds of gold.
Wow.
And 110,000 pounds of silver. That is a lot of gold and silver. Holy shit, man.
I would love to have it even now, even though some of that is probably not worth that much. I'll take it.
So the theft of the gold was soon overshadowed by Capio's prominent role in the defeat of the Battle of Arausio in 105 BC, the greatest Roman disaster since Cannae. Now proconsul and unwilling to cooperate with his superior, the novus homo consul, Gnaeus Malleus Maximus, some like long names back then,
yeah.
Eager for glory, provoked a battle with the Cimbri. The end result was a rout with at least 70,000 Roman legionaries dead, and total losses numbering over 120,000. So, jeez, this gold just brings death, anybody.
No, and I don't want it.
Yeah, you don't want
it. I lied.
You don't want all those pounds of gold and all those pounds of silver.
Nay.
If you do, you're just gonna be dead. Not no just thing. Dead, you're just dead.
Just dead.
All right, so we'll just go for one more. So James Dean's little bastard.
Okay, is this his car?
Yep, the car.
He called his car the bastard.
The little bastard.
Did he really?
He had it painted on the car also.
Oh my God.
And you know, I was it was actually gonna be its own episode. I was researching it, and the 130s. the 130 that he had painted on it. He had like the 130 painted on the hood and then painted on the sides as well. And the dude that designed his car, the same dude that designed the Batmobile.
Really?
Yeah. So.
How cool is that?
Yeah, it is really cool. George Barris. So George Barris, the self-described king of customizers. So George Barris asked him, like, why 130? Like, what's your infatuation with the number 130?
Now, if I would have had a chance to watch the autopsy with him, I would have known why. I'm pretty sure he said why, but I kept walking in and out of the room, so I didn't get a chance to watch it.
So, my theory.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
I mean, so when George was asking him, like, what's your obsession with the 130? Like, he refused that. James Dean just pretty much, like, deflected the answer.
Why?
He brushed it off. Like, he just didn't want to answer it. So, I'm figuring, like, 130, maybe that's the amount of,
cigarettes he smoked in a day.
Maybe that, or like the amount of women that he slept with.
Oh my God!
Because like he was the banger back then.
Who said that?
Nah, I'm just like,
oh my God.
The banger.
I don't think so.
No,
I don't think he was like that. But sure.
I'm just That'd be a high ass body count though. 130 women? Damn, that this is crazy. So anyway, pretty sure like people know about the crash. So on September 30th of 1955, Dean and his Porsche factory trained mechanic Rolf Wutrick.
Did you say Rolf?
Rolf. We're at Competition Motors in Hollywood preparing the little bastard for the weekend sports car races at Salinas? Is that how you pronounce it? Salinas?
Where's that?
Salinas.
Yeah.
Salinas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Dean originally intended to tow the Porsche behind his 1955 Ford Country Squire station wagon. Damn. I think he should have done that.
Maybe he would have been alive to this day. Or, no.
I don't want to date anybody's, like, time, but it's...
I'm sure people think that.
Because he fancied racing,
yes,
so...
And he was very good at it too.
Yeah.
Very professional.
Oh yeah.
But I think his accident had nothing to do with him. I think it was like they said.
The other guy.
The guy pulled out in front of him, did like a swift move, and he had no time to get out of there. So.
Yeah. So the station wagon was driven by Hickman and accompanied by professional photographer Sanford H. Roth, who was planning a.
Is that your phone?
No, it's not.
Is it mine?
I think so.
It is. Whoops, sorry.
Planning a photo story of Dean at the races for Collier's magazine. Because the Spider did not have enough break-in miles prior to the race, Wutrick recommended that Dean drive it to Salinas to get more seat time behind the wheel. Okay. The group had coffee and donuts at the Hollywood Ranch Market on Vine Street across from Competition Motors before leaving around 150...
Yep, go ahead and say it.
Around 1:15 p.m.
115?
Pacific Standards.
What time is it? It's 115?
15 p.m.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
What? No,
shit. Yes.
Pacific Standard Time. They stopped for gas at a mobile station on Ventura Boulevard at Beverly Glen Boulevard in Sherman Oaks around 2 o'clock p.m. I almost said 200 p.m.
Oh, my Lord. What is going on with you today?
The group then headed north on the Golden State Highway, United States Route 99, not part of Interstate 5, and then over the Grapevine toward Bakersfield.
heard it through the grapevine.
At 3:30 p.m., Dean was stopped by California Highway Patrolman O.D.V. Hunter at Mettler Station, south of Bakersfield, for driving 65 miles per hour or 105 kilometers.
65 miles per hour?
Yeah. In a 55 mile per hour zone.
I mean, that's normal.
Isn't that normal nowadays?
It's normal in North Carolina. Actually, 55 means 85 or 90 in North Carolina.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I feel like 10 miles over there. Come on.
That's not bad.
Bro. Come
that's
on.
That's not bad at all.
He must have wanted a bonus back then or something. I mean, crazy. Hickman, following the spider in the Ford Country Squire with the trailer, was also ticketed for driving 20 miles per hour.
That's 20 miles over the speed limit?
Yeah, that's is
a little much. That but is they some... do it here in North Carolina, like no problem.
As the speed limit for all vehicles towing a trailer was 45 miles per hour. Oh.
Whoops. Yikes! He was flying.
Wait, he was
towing something,
and he was
flying.
And he was doing the speed limit, but
no, he was going 20 over.
But no, he was doing 65.
That's a lot when you're towing something. You're only supposed to go 45.
I never knew that. Really,
they tell you that when you tow things, and actually, it's on the sometimes like the trailers, it'll say only go like when you're towing like vehicles or something like this. It says speed limit only 45.
Wow.
Because if you go too fast or something like that, and then you have to get out of the way, that trailer is going to whip it, you know?
Oh, and then a jackknife will happen.
We'll whip it good.
Woo! Whip it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, yes. After receiving the citations, Dean and Hickman headed west onto SR 166 33 to avoid going through Bakersfield's slow 25 miles per hour or 40 kilometers downtown district. SR 166 33 was a known shortcut for sports car drivers going to Salinas called the Racers Road, which took them directly to Blackwell's corner at United States Route 466, later SR 46. Huh, a lot of acronyms. Dean Arthur and expert Warren Beath disagrees, citing Rolf.
Is your phone dying?
No.
Oh, yeah, it's almost. I was going to put my phone on the charger, but
sorry.
It's normal.
Rolf's inquested position, wherein he specifically states they went through Bakersfield and turned left.
Let me see Rolf's name.
Rolf.
Where is it at?
His last name?
No. Show me his first name on there.
So R-O.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So Rolf.
Rolf. What the heck, name their kid Rolf.
Okay, so.
They're like, oh my God, look at that baby. His name is Rolf.
Rolf.
Oh, they were like, maybe they were like dog people.
Rolf, Rolf.
Yeah. Yeah. We're like, come here, Rolf.
Oh, Rolf.
Oh, my God.
Rolf. Come here, Rolf. Oh, shit. So they stopped briefly for refreshments and met up with fellow racers Lance Reventlo and Bruce Kessler, who were also on their way to Salinas in Reventlo's Mercedes-Benz 300 SL Coupe. Let's take a look at that beauty. Yeah, it's a nice...
It's
car.
Too small
for
little Matchbox car. Can't do it.
Yeah.
No. Nope. I don't know why. I don't know why
maybe.
I like big cars. Like it's only mostly been me. You know, I don't have like 500 kids and stuff like that. I don't know why I feel like having big cars is the thing to do. But I've always been a big car person. But also, I was in a car accident with a little tiny car. Maybe that's the problem. So now I like kind of stare away from them. Like, yeah, no little cars for me, thank you.
Yeah, those are like the bigger cars have somewhat of like a resistance.
I like big things, man. Big things.
Hey, yeah.
Okay, I'm just kidding. Calm down. Calm down, killer.
At approximately 5:15 p.m., Dean and Hickman left Blackwell's Corner driving west on Route 466 toward Paso Robles. Approximately 60 miles or 97 kilometers away. Dean accelerated in the little bastard and left the Ford station wagon far behind. Further along the Route 466, the Porsche crested Polonio Pass and headed down the long Antelope Grand. Passing cars along the way toward the junction of Route 466 and Route 41. At approximately 5:45, a two-tone black and white 1950 Ford Tudor was Tudor was headed east on Route 466 just west off the junction near Shandon. Its driver, 23-year-old U.S. Navy veteran, and
so wait, you just said that everybody you're sure everybody heard the story about what happened to his car, and now here you are going over the story of what happened with his car.
Oh, this was a refresher. But anyway, just to cut to the point.
Yeah.
This dude,
yeah.
He apparently tried to steer the Spider into in a sidestep stepping racing maneuver, but with insufficient time and space, the two cars collided almost head on.
Yeah.
Dude was in like a rush for something, right? He was rushing for work.
Timing himself to get home or trying to get to work, but he would like NASCAR maneuver his way to or from or wherever he was going. He was trying to beat this time or something like that. Yeah. And just pulled out right in front of him.
Just
and he had
a bad thing. And where, okay. So, like, where the curse for, like, James Dean's car came from. It's just like pretty much like his buddy or like fellow actor, was it like Alec somebody, like Alec, the one who played Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Star Wars. So he met up with him and he saw a James Dean's, you know, the work that he did with the car. Mm-hmm. And the car also had these like, it's like red and black seats.
Cool.
He said the car looked sinister and he told James that, you know, like this was a week before his accident, his fatal accident. Mm. He told James Dean, so, like, you pretty much like, if you get in that thing, you're gonna die in it, like,
so,
within a week.
That's fucked up. First of all, we would stop being friends after that. I cannot be your friend if you told me that. And second of all, I feel like he got cursed. It's not the car that's cursed, it's the dude that said it kind of cursed him, don't you think?
Yeah,
because
the story goes,
on the autopsy thing, like after the ambulance came and got him and his buddy and put him in the ambulance, they were riding along and the ambulance got into a car accident.
Yeah.
So, and that's where they think he, you know, that was it for him. They think maybe he would have been alive in the ambulance, but because they didn't have the proper neck brace on him, and then the ambulance got in a car accident and then kind of shifted him again, mm-hmm. so it probably broke his neck and then finished him off completely. Yeah. I mean, his neck was already probably broke,
mm-hmm.
but they just did even more damage to whatever was damaged already. So
yeah,
and that has nothing to do with the car. The car wasn't with him. So how do you know the dude didn't curse him?
There's also stories of the car mysteriously disappearing.
But don't they have it somewhere? Or pieces of it somewhere? I don't remember.
Last I checked, I think like somebody had a all right. Although the little bastard remains.
Maybe because he named it that. Maybe you should have named it Fluffy.
The little bastard.
You should have named it Fluffy. Or Pebbles.
So, okay.
That
all right.
That doesn't sound sinister.
So, okay. So, there are a few stories associated with the curse that can be corroborated. For example, a wire service story on the March 12th, 1959, reported that the little bastard temporarily stored in a garage at 3158 Hamilton Avenue in Fresno caught fire, awaiting display as a safety exhibit in a coming sports and custom automobile show.
I don't think that's cursed.
Why? What? Like the vehicle just like randomly sets on fire?
No, I think maybe the dude's spirit was with it, and he was like, "I don't want this car displayed."
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, and then he... Oh, James Dean?
Yeah, maybe... I don't think... I don't consider
you know, that could
a
be
curse.
A...
Maybe he was trying to protect his car.
So he sets...
He sets it on
fire. Sets it on fire so it doesn't get displayed.
I was just trying to see the positive in this.
Yeah.
It's not really a positive. I was trying to make it positive.
However, on May 12, 1959, the Fresno Bee reported that the fire occurred on the night of March 11th and only slight damage occurred to the spider without any damage to other cars or property in the garage. No one was injured.
Interesting.
The cause of the fire is unknown.
See?
It burned two tires and scorched the paint on the vehicle. Later that year, the little bastard toured the national auto shows and safety exhibitions. Legend also holds that the little bastard mysteriously disappeared in 1960. According to Barris, the spider was returning from a traffic safety exhibit in Florida in a sealed truck. In Barris's book, and in many TV interviews, he said the little bastard was being shipped...
Why do you keep saying it like that, gosh?
The little bastard.
You're so mean.
Back, shipped back in a sealed boxcar. When the train arrived in Los Angeles, Barris said he signed the manifest and verified that the seal was intact, but the boxcar was empty. The little bastard.
Oh, my God. See, that's the problem. That's the problem right there. You shouldn't have named it that. Just call it Fluffy.
Raskin believes... Ooh. Raskin believes that Barris is a little bastard.
It's Fluffy.
Well, Sideshow lost its fan appeal just as the 1960s pop culture began to focus on big block muscle cars. Raskin also believes that Barris opted to misplace the little bastard.
A.K.A. Fluffy.
The mysterious disappearance stories were Barris's way of perpetuating the Dean myth, especially on the milestone anniversaries of Dean's death. Although the little bastard...
Fluffy.
remains missing as of 2022. Still missing. Wow. Historic Auto Attractions in Roscoe, Illinois claims to have an original piece of Dean Spider on display. It's a small chunk of aluminum. I remember this, I think. Somewhere.
Yeah, probably the Mysteries at the Museum.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes, that is, yeah. It's a small chunk of aluminum, a few square inches in size, that was stolen from an area near the broken windscreen while the spider was being stored in the Colum garage following the crash. In 2005, for the 50th anniversary of Dean's death, the Volo Auto Museum in Volo, Illinois, announced they were displaying what was purported to be the passenger door of the little bastard.
Fluffy.
Volo and Barris offered $1 million to anyone who could prove that they owned the remains of the little bastard.
Fluffy.
No one came forth to claim the prize. Really?
Wow.
$1 million? Who would pass up $1 million?
I know. Like, no. Because not only do you get $1 million, you're going to get arrested for taking the vehicle. So, yeah, why would you do that?
So,
I'm going to take $1 million, but now I'm going to have to take myself out of jail with this $1 million.
This million dollar bail.
Oh, no. Yeah, like, come on now.
Hey, you get it? You get it? And oh, you, no. You get it. You come get the $1 million, and then they send you to jail, and then you get out on bail, and then you go, out on bail, fresh out of jail, hearing Hooch screaming. Soon as I pop on the scene.
You better calm down over there. Hooch, you screaming. Get the fuck out of here. Oh, God. You're too much.
So anyway, yeah, so the Porsche is still freaking missing.
Nobody yeah, no shit.
It. Nobody.
We just discussed
it.
Why. It made sense to me.
But there's like, you know, little bits and pieces here and there. So the 4-cam Porsche engine, along with original California owner's registration listing the engine number, is still in the possession of family, in the family of the late Dr. Esrich. I don't know if I'm saying his name right.
Probably not.
The Porsche's transaxle assembly is currently owned by Porsche collector and restorer Jack Stiles in Massachusetts. Raskin originally documented and published all the serial numbers for the Spider, chassis, engine, and transmission, as well.
Did you say chassis?
Chassis, yep.
It's chassis.
Oh, chassis. as well as chassis? For his 356 Super Speeder. Speedster. To date, neither of Dean's Porsches have been located. That is fucking crazy. All right.
Because he doesn't want that shit on display.
Yeah.
Like he I just said.
Yeah. But that could be possible.
I honestly don't think it's cursed. I think as soon as that dude was like, if you drive this, you're going to die, I would be like, fuck you, we're not friends. Poor, quit talking about my shit.
Poor Alec. I mean, not poor Alec. I mean, if he, like, told James
Dean
that.
Yeah, how rude. Yeah. How would you like it if someone told you that about your car?
Oh, my God. I don't think I would want to drive my car then.
You wouldn't be. Would you still talk to that person?
Probably not.
Yeah. Just like, I'm like, you better get out of here with your negative attitude.
The fuck are you talking about, dude?
What you talking about, Willis?
Anyway, that takes us to the end.
I'm sure that's not the end.
Oh, no, it's never the end. There will be more objects to cover in the future. But we're going to have to cut it right here. And
cut it.
Any final thoughts, Cassie?
No. Not really. I'm a little disappointed in the urban legend and the fiction shit that you...
Oh, the crying boy thing? I was, like, hoping that one had some sort of standing to it. But, you know, with the theory of the picture frame having some flame retardant material infused in it, and that could explain why the painting was untouched during the fires and all that.
I mean, it did look like a sad painting, though.
And then the Anguish Man one, that one is crazy. That one is like,
I know, but it also made no fucking sense. We don't know who it is, but we think he committed suicide. What?
We think that this dude painted in his blood with the paint and then...
died because he used all his blood on the painting. That is so sad.
You don't... Like, if he used that much blood, just think like... logically here, like if he used
no, and then he could just bled out.
Yeah, and you know there was no signs of the painting like having any because you know you like you get woozy after you lose like a certain amount of blood.
Oh yeah,
and then probably
you would have noticed some squiggly lines.
I don't know, maybe something some sort of to that matter.
He missed some spots,
something like that. Just oh like a little God. Smidge right here, like he could have got, but like
I didn't
his.
Even look, I didn't honestly. I didn't even look that hard at the painting because it looked creepy. So.
Yeah, it
did. Not now. Mm. I feel bad for James Dean's car and James Dean.
Yeah,
that was.
It was a nice looking Porsche.
That was a tragedy.
And it was
it really
a tragedy.
Was, but tragedies happen every day, unfortunately. So.
Yeah, fortunately. All right, guys, that's the end of the episode. Hopefully, you guys enjoyed this episode. You know, if you liked it, you know what to do: share the podcast episode, share the whole podcast to get our listens up, and then get us up.
Oh,
through the
let me tell you something before we end this conversation.
Okay,
kind of to the story about the guy saying bad things and then bad things happening because the guy said it. There was a story that I heard from Rosemary about these. This family that lives in Virginia, this true story.
Mm.
Family lives in Virginia, family had 10 kids.
Okay.
But I think the house was in bad shape or something. Everyone kept saying, if you don't take care of this, you don't take care of this, your house is going to catch on fire. Your kids are going to die or something like that. You guys are all going to die.
Oh, wow.
Well, shortly after that, the house caught on fire.
Yo, what the fuck?
And 5 of the kids were able to get out. 5 of the kids were never got out, never came out. And then they went to go look for him in the burns.
Mm.
And couldn't find no bodies, no bones, no nothing. 5 kids gone. Disappeared.
Was this a recent story?
I don't know how recent it was. She just told me about this yesterday.
This is a
unsolved case.
Wow.
And yeah, but the people, the fire department says the fire did not get that hot to dissolve all the bones. You know, because sometimes... Actually, most of the time, there's bones left over from fire. It has to reach a certain degree in order to burn your bones. Bones would have been there. They could find no bones of any kids.
Wow.
So 5 kids, gone. But just there was these people. An insurance person came to the house, and they declined the insurance. And the insurance person said bad things like, well, your house is going to catch on fire. What are you going to do then? And then somebody else came and said the same thing.
Mm.
And then shortly after that, then all this shit happened. But people noticed that. People were showing up around the house before the house caught on fire.
Hmm.
And windows were open that were closed. So they think those 5 kids may have been kidnapped.
by the insurance people.
Or somebody. But, you know, nobody really, it's an unsolved case. It's
interesting case.
See, people need to watch what the fuck they say because shit goes down.
Yeah. That is, like, worth looking into. Like, unsolved cases. Stuff like that. Like, stuff that,
that's
like.
Not paranormal, though.
I mean.
It would have been different if they would have been, like. I don't know. I feel like it's not paranormal to me. It's just an unsolved. It's sad.
I guess it's like a more of like a crime type of unsolved crime thing.
Yeah.
Even though like I'm into true crime, this really, really isn't a true crime podcast. We're just like pretty much like talking about stuff of the unknown and then just like speculating paranormal occurrences and all that. Just like. Pretty much like something of the weird realm.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, you know, if there is like a smidge sort of paranormal in it. Cause
I don't
like,
think so. I think somebody came and kidnapped those kids. But what ended up happening was they thought the kids were separated. Like one went to a convent, one went to another family. Mm-hmm. But I don't understand why these kids were, if they were kidnapped, why did they not get returned back to their family? Or if somebody saved them, why did they not get turn back to their family?
I don't know. Yeah, that definitely is a weird case.
It is.
Yeah.
Anyways, my point was just saying bad things to somebody
could reflect.
Something.
Yeah, words are definitely have
they
power.
Hurt some, yeah, true. True story. That's right. It. Thank you very much, and have a good day.
All right. Okay. Yes. End of the episode.
Yeah.
All right. All right, guys. We will see you next time, and don't forget to follow the podcast to get updates on the episodes and when they come out.
And check out Haunted Dolls episode, because that episode is awesome.
Definitely, yes. Highly recommended that episode. Highly recommend.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Love
peace,
and chicken grease.
Bye.